Rock.com.
The Races of America, Part 1. The Indian or Aborigine. The Indian or Aboriginal of this continent. What is he, and where does he come from? This would seem easy enough to reply to, and yet writers, educated and even some scientific men, have so confused and bewildered the matter that few people have any precise or true knowledge of it. The Indian races of America are all the same species, from the Columbia River to Cape Horn, and they were created here just as absolutely and unmistakably as were all the animals, plants and forests that belong to this continent. How, or when, or why this is so, we are not permitted to know, for then we would be as wise as the Almighty Creator himself. And though some men are vain enough and impious enough to claim to have some secret and mysterious knowledge of the divine counsels in this respect, common sense and the nature of things forbid us to listen to their nonsense. Some have supposed that at some remote period the ancestors of the people discovered by the Spanish adventurers on this continent crossed over Bering's Strait, and that, very likely, there was a continuous link of islands connecting the continents of Asia and America. Others have fancied regular migrations at various times from the Asiatic continent, and even apparently intelligent persons in other respects have supposed that the 10 lost tribes found their way to America. Indeed, this is rather a favourite speculation with a great many who have undertaken to account for the presence of human beings on this continent, and, oddly enough, a large and notorious religious sect have not only accepted it, but have made it the fundamental basis of their religious belief. The Mormon chief, Joseph Smith, based his revelation on this speculation, and it is believed that even his far better informed and more respectable successor, Brigham Young, still holds to this assumption of the Mormon prophet. With a more advanced and accurate knowledge of natural phenomena and fixed laws than now obtains among, ordinarily speaking, educated men, a great many things that in our time, past current, and scarcely without a question, will be exploded, and not only rendered uncertain, but entirely foolish, as they necessarily conflict with the laws of nature. And this is clearly the case with Mormonism and the assumed revelations of the Mormon chiefs. They declare, "We believe that Mormon himself was one of the leaders of the lost tribes and progenitors of the people found here by Columbus and the Spanish discoverers of America. And as this could not be so, as the native or Indian species of this continent was as absolutely and unmistakably created here as the forests were, the revelation itself, based on a foolish falsehood, must be, of course, equally false." Even if the most improbable migration of people from Palestine to America were admitted, it is as absurd to fancy Indians originating from Hebrews, who were pure Caucasians, as to fancy owls originating from eagles or bulldogs from greyhounds. And therefore it is repeated, the Mormon revelation, being in conflict with the unchangeable laws of nature, is not only untrue, but nonsensical. The native races, as observed, are the same species throughout the continent, and though they approximate closer to the Mongol of Asia than to the Caucasian of Europe, it were, of course, just as impossible that they could originate from the former as from the latter. The word Indian, so commonly applied, was given to the natives of America with a belief, no doubt, that there was a unity of inhabitants, if not indeed of continents. It is a corruption of the term Hindu, and well illustrates the loose and indefinite knowledge of those who, very learned it may be, in certain subjects or branches of knowledge, are quite ignorant of others, but unconscious of it, talk with such confidence and ease that the whole educated public accept their dictum without a question or doubt of any kind whatever. The Hindus were originally a conquering horde, or dynasty, of Caucasians, but intermixed with the conquered Mongolians of the peninsula of India. The white blood, save perhaps in a royal family or a few families, became extinct in time, so that these mighty populations subsequently fell an easy conquest to a petty company of English traders. Columbus never dreamed even of a new world. He only conceived of a shorter route to India than that recently discovered by the Portuguese, and when he found America, he called it India, and hence not Hindu, but the word Indian, now universally applied to the aborigines of this continent. There were, no doubt, numerous instances of Caucasian intruders at long intervals, but it is not probable that any of them came from Asia. They were, most likely, shipwrecked mariners, though it is certainly possible that at some remote period they came over as emigrants, or, at all events, adventurers, something like their Spanish successors. But be this as it may, or whatever the form or period or circumstances surrounding these intrusive Caucasians, it is certain that all the antiquities discovered on this continent are the result of Caucasian intrusion. We know this must be so, for the good and sufficient reason that it is the only historic race or species, for even those great and mighty structures found in China and among other Mongolian nations largely partake of a Caucasian innovation. And more conclusive still, the white man alone migrates, and among all the Chinese that were attracted by Californian gold, there was probably not one instance of their reaching there through Chinese means, or one single individual that did not intend to return to his country. A single ship's crew of white men reaching America would result in a certain progress, as we call it, that is, something like a regular government, manufacture, etc. But in a few generations, their mongrel progeny becoming extinct, there would be nothing left to indicate their former presence, save those absurd antiquities which Stevens and Squire and Schoolcraft and others fancy they find in such abundance scattered over the New World. These writers on American antiquities may be very learned and able men in many respects, but being utterly ignorant of the simple but elementary laws that distinguish the several species of mankind, all that they assume in the premises is not only false, but must be so, of course. The New World, discovered by the Spaniards, was literally a new world in everything to the European mind, for not only its human creatures, its animals and plants and forests, but its fishes, insects, everything that had life in it was new to Europeans, and not one single species of any kind or form whatever had ever been seen before. Even its soils were radically different from the old world, and though a beneficent creator has deigned, for the good of his creatures, to permit some few exceptions, both of animals and plants, and therefore there is a certain approximation of large districts in this respect to the old world, the vast proportion of this continent has altogether different soils from those of Europe. It was then the New World, not simply because before unknown, but because all that belonged to it was new to the European mind, that Columbus and his companions discovered just as the 15th century was drawing to a close. The native organism has been so little studied that it is somewhat difficult where to place it. but with 5 to 8% more brain than the Negro, its relative position on this continent may be easily comprehended. Foolish and sentimental people with the stupid theory that Indians are simply savage Caucasians and that education can transform them into civilization have endowed them with many savage virtues, and it is said that some people have been vain of claiming affinity with these subordinate and less developed beings. Indeed, the very apathy and absence of sensibility that enables an Indian to sing his death song amidst the flames that consume him has led a great many persons to fancy a high and noble nature arising above the seeming physical pain. Like the still more obtuse and apathetic Negro, the Indian feels but little pain in these things, and the mind or soul has nothing to do with the matter, or at all events, perceives it dimly. In the more genial latitudes of Mexico and South America, the native had made some progress, probably all the progress the species is capable of when isolated, and it is probable that it had been in that condition centuries or even thousands of years when discovered by the Spaniards. The stories told by Bernal Diaz and his companions, and repeated by Prescott, Helps and others, of the magnificence of Cholula and Mexico are the sheerest nonsense imaginable, not only untrue even in approximation, but necessarily so. For the native mind could no more build such supposed cities and temples than it could change the colour of the native skin, or increase the vigour, or change the form of the native brain. They collected at times, as in Cholula and Tlaxcala, in villages built of adobe or unburnt bricks, perhaps to the extent of several thousand persons. And a certain number of these villages, among the lakes in the valleys of Mexico, were sufficiently pabulum for the excited imaginations of the Spanish conquerors to transform them into mighty cities. Montezuma himself was no doubt a Mexican deity rather than earthly prince, but with all the lower species of mankind, there is a certain connection between the visible and invisible powers, and the Aztecs of Mexico were governed more by their monstrous gods and bloody priests than by those fanciful governors or lieutenants of Montezuma, the Spanish writers have represented. They had, it is true, become cultivators to a certain extent, indeed coarsely fabricated some things that looked like manufactures, but the single fact that they had never advanced to workers in iron or metals of any kind tells the whole story of Native Americans on this continent. Gold and silver ornaments were found in Mexico and Peru by the Spanish adventurers, but they were the simple metals beaten into fantastic shapes, no doubt, by stones or flints. Even the knives the priests cut open the breasts of their victims with were of flint, and some of these rude implements are still preserved and show the feeble development of these people in their most advanced phase. Perhaps nothing can so well illustrate the non-capabilities of the aboriginal race as a simple statement of what Cholula and the Pyramid of Cholula presents to the traveller now. The writer has stood on the very spot where Cortes sat and wrote his famous letter to Charles V. After the conquest of the city of Cholula, Cortes says he sits on the summit of the pyramid itself, grander and more stupendous than those of Egypt, and at its base is the great city, with its 200,000 people, and sitting there he can see 1,200 mosques and count 400 temples or religious edifices besides. This pyramid is simply one of the numerous cerros or conical hills that are frequent in the plains and valleys of Mexico, and rises to an altitude of several hundred feet. There are some artificial additions, on the sides of this hill, made of adobe or sunburnt brick, which probably were constructed by the natives as burial places, especially for the human victims offered up as sacrifices at the temple to the sun that stood on the summit of the pyramid. The sacrificial stone on which the victim was bound, and the flint knife with which the priests laid open the breast and tore out the still palpitating heart to show for the people, are still to be seen. But the temple to the sun, and that mighty city that Cortes saw so clearly, have disappeared so utterly that not even a single stone or brick exists to note that they ever existed. There is nothing, not even an indentation, or the slightest unevenness, in the level greensward at the base of the pyramid, though it was only 3.5 centuries ago, and the present city of Puebla, built in the vicinity by the Spaniards, would no doubt leave some memorial of its present existence 10,000 years hence. The simple truth, therefore, is there was no city of Cholula, or pyramid of Cholula, or temple to the sun at the time of the Spanish conquest. There was nothing but an Indian village, only a degree larger than Powhatan's in Virginia, with a great hill, and perhaps an Indian lodge of some kind on its summit, where the native medicine men offered up their sacrifices and performed their bloody incantations. The love of exaggeration, in the Spanish mind, the strange, uncouth, and mysterious new world that confounded them, and more than all besides, the desire to astound their friends at home, and to exalt their own wonderful exploits in conquering this strange land, fully account for and explain the stories of the conquerors. We witness a certain difference in the development of the great master races of mankind. And while the Egyptians, the Hebrews, and the Assyrians were great and prosperous, Greece, Rome, and the Mediterranean were unheard of, and when the latter were the centre of civilization, northern Germany, Gaul, and Britain were silent. Or in other words, in the more genial clime, the specific capabilities were soonest developed, and where the species can permanently live at all, it develops its capacities most rapidly. So with the native or Indian of this continent, he had no doubt reached his utmost limit in the Valley of Mexico, most likely had been stationary for thousands of years when discovered by the Spaniards, and in all reasonable probability would make no further advance in millions of years to come. Starting from this advanced condition of the native race, a condition of imperfect agriculture, without commerce, manufactures, or trade of any kind, without even the capacity of working metals in the slightest degree, as we advance into the less genial latitudes of the north, we find the native races becoming more and more barbarous, until reaching Canada and the lakes, where they are simple hunters and predatory tribes desperately struggling to save themselves by the destruction of each other. There is nothing in the warfare or enterprise of these northern tribes that corresponds with the migrations and the conquests of hordes in Asia. The escape from Egyptian bondage by the Hebrews, leaving out of view its sacred character, was a rational and instinctive desire to benefit their condition. So too, the conquests of Genghis Khan and the Osmanli, indeed that of the Magyars into Europe, all these mighty movements were impelled by the same instinctive desire that in our own times prompts the individual Irishman or German to migrate to America to benefit his condition. The only differ in form. In the former case, a horde, a nation, mighty masses of men seek to benefit their condition by migrations, conquests, or even escapes, as in the case of the Hebrews. And in modern times, individuals, families, and sometimes whole neighbourhoods join in these efforts for a better condition. But it is only the great master race that does this, either en masse or as individuals, for it alone has no limit to its aspirations, its capabilities, its indefinite perfectibility. The notion of General Harrison and others, therefore, that the Toltecs and Aztecs of Mexico migrated from the banks of the Ohio to the great central regions of the continent, is simply absurd. The hunter and predatory tribes prey upon, and often perhaps displace each other, as we witness in our western territories, but this has none of that instinctive impulse for a better condition that is displayed by our own race, and which the white man is alone capable of manifesting. All other species of men are stationary, not alone in their actual capacities, but in their locations, and whatever the changes in the location of the numerous Indian tribes of the north, or of the whole continent, are blind, unmeaning accidents, resulting wholly from struggles, not to improve their condition, but to preserve their actual temporary existence. Maize, or Indian corn, and the sweet potato seem to have been the sole products of such agriculture as the Spaniards found in Mexico, and the former was also cultivated by the Indian women in the extreme north, in the valley of the Mohawk and Genesee, as well as in the valleys of Puebla and Mexico. The native cotton was sometimes fabricated into a kind of cloth, but the nearest approaches to anything like manufactures were made from feathers and the plumage of the birds of the tropics. The famous picture writing, which the Spanish adventurers imposed on credulous Europeans, was, like most of their stories, without even a foundation in fact. The Indian or native brain is larger and better organized than that of the Negro, and therefore his capabilities are decidedly greater, and while the latter has never even attempted an alphabet or to compute numbers, there were probably some rude efforts of this character among the Aztecs and Toltecs of Mexico. But the picture writing, which was borrowed from the Egyptian hieroglyphic practice of antique times and purported to be equally perfect among the Aztecs, and which Lord Knaresborough has presented to the world in several large volumes in our own times, is a sheer imposture, long since exploded, even in Europe. The antique Egyptians were of our own race, and therefore this Mexican picture writing, which resembled the former, must be an imposture, and for the rest, it is sufficient to say that the native mind could no more do this thing than it could change the colour of its skin or modify its physical structure in any respect. Save that universal tendency to pairing off, common to the sexes in all races, and indeed, to some extent, among the higher orders of animals, the native of this continent had no such institution as that of marriage. They, no doubt, were above the Negro in this respect, whose main possessions are his women and children, but the Spanish writers have left us nothing that can be relied upon. All the social relations of these people, marriages and government, are a blank to us, and the utmost that we know, or ever can know, is their physical structure and mental capabilities as displayed in the circumstances that surrounded them on the advent of their European conquerors. Such, briefly considered, is all we know, or can know, of the natives of this continent, when discovered by the Spanish adventurers, and it may all be summed up in the following. First, it was literally a new world, and of all its multitudes of creatures, not one single species, men, animals, serpents, fishes, insects, or plants, had ever been seen before, and as the native has no instinct, aspiration, or indeed capacity to migrate. Therefore, it is as obvious that they were created here as that the forests were. Second, they have the same physical structure, the same brain, and though differing slightly in degree, manifest the same external tendencies from the Canadas to Brazil, and therefore constitute the same species. Third, they not only did not build cities, mosques, or temples, but their limited powers are forever incapable of making any permanent impression on the world about them. Therefore, Indian antiquities is an absurd misnomer, and the things mistaken for such are the results of Caucasian intrusion. Fourth, the low grade of the native in the human scale, very greatly below the Mongol and decidedly below even the Malay, it is reasonable to say that they had long since reached their utmost limits when discovered by Europeans, and thousands, probably millions of years hence, would never have advanced beyond that of the Aztecs in Mexico. Fifth, finally, it is obvious that an all-wise and beneficent creator has designed the juxtaposition of races, for otherwise not only the Negro, but the Indian of this continent would be made in vain, and American civilization impossible.
You're listening to Radio Aryan at Radio Aryan.